Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents J.A. Johnstone's The Loner, narrated by Terrence Aselford, with performances by Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Christopher Sheeran, Elizabeth Jernigan, Stephen Carpenter, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Patrick Busick, Anastasia Wilson, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, Jeff Allen, Joe Brack, Bradley Smith, Ken Jackson, Evan Casey, Gregory Gorton, and Mort Shelby. The Loner, Book 10, The Blood of Renegades. Rugged, snow-capped mountains rose in the distance, a majestic sight under a beautiful blue sky. The same couldn't be said about the terrain over which Conrad Browning and Arturo Vincenzo traveled. There was nothing majestic about it. The landscape was mostly flat and semi-arid, sparsely covered by tough grass, dotted with scrubby mesquites, greasewood, and slashed by the colossal arroyo. Hardly the oasis Brigham Young had promised his followers, Conrad mused. But the Mormons had made their homes in Utah anyway, and in most cases seemed to be thriving, if bustling Salt Lake City was any indication. Conrad and Arturo had passed through the city a few days earlier, and since then had been making their way around the huge Salt Lake that gave the place its name. Following the railroad that skirted the northern end of the lake, they had left the vast body of water behind them and angled southwestward toward Nevada. Conrad rode a big, blaze-faced black gelding, while Arturo handled the reins hitched to the four-horse team pulling the buggy. They had been together for several months after leaving Boston and embarking on a cross-country quest for Conrad's lost children, little Frank and Vivian. More than a month later, while they were in Denver searching for clues to where Pamela might have taken the children, Conrad and Arturo had gotten roped into some trouble that left Arturo with a wounded arm. Since then, they'd been traveling at a slower pace, so his injury would have more time to heal. Conrad had handled the buggy for a while, but Arturo's arm was stronger, and he had resumed his driving chores. That was fine with Conrad. He preferred being in the saddle.
My word! There's really not much out here, is there? I thought Wyoming was godforsaken, but this is just depressing.
I don't know. It has a certain stark beauty about it, don't you think?
For about the first 10 minutes. After that, it's just flat and empty and ugly.
Conrad couldn't argue with that. It seemed like a pretty accurate assessment to him. Still ahead of them in Nevada were areas like that, but eventually they would get into the prettier country around Reno and Carson City. Carson City. Just thinking about the place threatened to send waves of melancholy sweeping over Conrad's soul. It was where he and Rebel had lived when she was murdered. Their home had gone up in flames. For a while, everyone believed Conrad had perished in the blaze. He wanted them to think that. Kid Morgan was born then, and he'd set out on his mission of vengeance. Unexpectedly, vengeance had turned out to not be very satisfying. Conrad had drifted for a while after, but violence and death seemed to dog his trail. The revelation about the twins had changed everything.
How long will it take for us to get to the mountains?
Maybe late today, maybe early tomorrow. We'll have to follow the railroad through the passes. There may be other ways through, but I don't know them.
We could be in San Francisco tomorrow if we took the train.
Yes, we could. But what if Pamela hid the twins somewhere along the way?
I wasn't suggesting that we should take the train, but rather just commenting on the relative speed with which it could deliver us to our destination. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, amazing.
As he spoke, he was distracted by a cloud of dust he spotted north of the railroad tracks. Squinting toward the dust, he watched it drift closer. Arturo noticed where Conrad was looking and turned his head, studying the desert country in that direction, too.
Someone's coming.
Yeah, fast, too.
And that usually meant trouble. Conrad reined in his horse and Arturo brought the buggy to a stop. As they watched, the dust column continued to move toward them. Conrad's keen eyes made out a single figure at the base of the column. His gaze shifted, and he lifted a hand to point.
Even more dust back there.
What does it mean? It
means that fella in front is being chased by at least half a dozen riders, and I'll bet they don't have anything good in mind for him.
What exactly are we going to do about it?
Now, that's a good question.
He reached for his Winchester and drew it out of the saddle boot.
I knew it! Whatever this trouble is, you're going to get mixed up right in the middle of it, aren't you? You can't let it gallop on past. Yeah!
Conrad heeled his horse into a run across the arid plains in a course that would intercept the fleeing rider. He had been torn for only a second between the two courses of action that lay before him. He and Arturo could stay where they were, allow the pursuit to pass in front of them and continue on to the south, which was probably the smarter thing to do, since he was on an important mission of his own, finding his lost children. Or he could give in to the part of him that didn't like 6-1 odds. That was the urge that won the mental battle. He had gotten in the habit of sticking up for anybody who was outnumbered. It was possible the fleeing rider was a killer or a train robber or some other sort of outlaw with a posse on his trail. In that case, Conrad would stop the fugitive and do a favor for the law. But he had to get an idea of what was going on. He didn't hear any shots or see any puffs of powder smoke from the pursuers. Evidently, they weren't out to kill the person they were after. Suddenly, Conrad realized he needed to stop thinking of that lone rider as a man. He was close enough to see long, fair hair streaming out behind the rider's head. Some men wore their hair long like that, but Conrad's instincts told him the single rider was a woman. A woman being chased by that many men was bound to be in trouble. Hauling back on the reins, he brought his mount to a stop. He levered around into the Winchester's firing chamber and brought the rifle to his shoulder. Aiming high, he squeezed the trigger and sent a shot blasting over the heads of the pursuers, who were a couple of hundred yards away. The woman was closer, maybe 50 yards in front of him. She changed course, veering toward him, hoping he would protect her. The pursuers didn't return his fire. As the woman flashed past Conrad without slowing down, he caught a glimpse of her pale, frightened face. Glancing over his shoulder after her, he saw Arturo had followed him in the buggy and was stopped a short distance away. He had jumped down from the vehicle and stood with a rifle in his hands, ready to get into the fight if need be. Conrad turned his attention back to the pursuers, who slowed their horses and then stopped, evidently unwilling to charge right into the threat of two Winchesters. They were far enough away Conrad couldn't make out any details about them except the broad-brimmed hats and long dusters they wore. The horses milled around as the dust cloud kicked up by their hooves started to blow away. Seconds passed in nerve-stretching tension. Finally, one of the men prodded his horse forward. Conrad stayed where he was, waiting in motionless silence as the man rode slowly toward him.
That's far enough!
Mister, I don't know who you are, but you're mixing in something that's none of your concern.
The spokesman for the pursuers was a thick-set man with dark beard stubble on his face. One eye was squeezed almost shut, no doubt from the injury that had left a scar angling away from it.
That woman belongs to us!
You may not have heard, but it's almost a new century. Enlightened people are starting to believe women don't actually belong to anyone, except themselves.
No matter what century it is, the law's the law!
What law?
The law of God!
You're Mormons, aren't you?
Call ourselves saints, or in our case, angels.
Avenging angels, Conrad thought. Gun-packing enforcers for the leader of the Mormon hierarchy.
Chasing a scared girl across this wasteland doesn't strike me as being very religious.
Now don't you presume to know the will of the Lord. The girl is ours and she goes back with us. She has defied the elders and must be punished.
You'll have to take her from us.
Now there are six of us, two of you.
Yes, but we'll kill four of you before you put us down. Maybe five. Maybe even all six. Not to brag, but I'm pretty good with a gun. Maybe we'll all wind up lying here, food for the buzzards, and then the girl will ride away. What good will that do your elders?
The other men had been listening intently to the exchange and rode up next to their leader. One of them spoke up.
Leatherwood, maybe we better not do this. We're just supposed to bring her back, not kill anybody.
The leader's head jerked around.
This man's not going to tell me what to do. Our orders were to fetch the girl.
We'll be able to find her later. Where are they going to go that we can't find them whenever we want to? This is our home.
The one called Leatherwood hesitated. He glared back and forth between his companions and Conrad.
Elder Hyssop was clear about what we're supposed to do. I don't know about you, Kylie, but I don't much want to go back without doing as we were told.
They won't get away. Besides, after these men have been saddled with that headstrong female for a while, they may want us to take her off their hands.
That's a good point.
Leatherwood turned back to Conrad.
All right, mister, if you want her, take her. But know that by defying us, you signed your death warrant. Sooner or later, we'll kill you, and the girl will go back where she belongs.
Talk like that makes me wonder why I don't just go ahead and drill you right now.
Oh, you're welcome to go ahead and try, mister.
Conrad began backing his horse away. He never took his eyes off the six men.
Arturo, take the girl and get out of here. I'll cover your back trail.
The Mormon gunmen stayed where they were. Conrad understood why the one called Kylie hadn't wanted to force the issue at that time. Outnumbered, surrounded by miles and miles of nothing, and no place where they could get any help, he and Arturo were at a definite disadvantage. The Avenging Angels could stalk them at their leisure. Conrad and Arturo would have no way of knowing when or where the inevitable attack would come. For now, more gunplay appeared to have been headed off, and Conrad had a chance to find out who the girl was and what was going on. He didn't mind fighting, but generally he liked to know what he was fighting for, especially when trouble was delaying him in his efforts to find his missing children. He heard the buggy and the girl's horse departing behind him and continued backing his horse away from the gunman. When he had put 100 yards between himself and them, he whirled the horse without warning and kicked it into a run.
Yeah!
As he galloped after Arturo and the girl, he looked over his shoulder and saw the Mormons weren't giving chase. That surprised him a little, but obviously Leatherwood had decided they were going to bide their time. Conrad was sure of one thing. The trouble was far from over. Because Kylie was right. There was no place for them to go where the Avenging Angels couldn't find them. Conrad, Arturo, and their unexpected companion didn't stop until they'd gone at least a mile. Conrad kept checking behind them. He was ready to stop and throw up a screen of rifle fire to cover their getaway, but the gunman didn't come after them. When they finally reined in, the horses were fatigued by the hard run. The young woman's horse was in the worst shape. She had been fleeing from her pursuers before Conrad and Arturo joined the chase. She wasn't in much better shape. Trying to dismount, she half fell out of the saddle and had to grab hold of a stirrup to keep herself from dropping to the ground. Conrad had already slid his Winchester into the saddle boot and swung down from the black. He reached out to grasp her arm and steady her.
Arturo, get one of the canteens.
Arturo turned around on the buggy seat, found a canteen in the boxes and bags of supplies, and brought the water over to them. Conrad unscrewed the cap and held the canteen to the young woman's mouth. She grabbed it with both hands and gulped down as much water as she could, but Conrad pulled the canteen away after a couple of swallows.
Take it easy. You make yourself sick.
Thank you. If you hadn't come along, I wouldn't have made it much further.
While Conrad waited a moment before he gave her another drink, he took advantage of the opportunity to have a good look at her. She was tall and slender, and hair a little lighter in color than honey flowed all the way down her back to her hips. She wore men's clothing, a rough cotton shirt with the sleeves rolled up a couple of turns on tanned forearms, brown twill trousers with suspenders that went over her shoulders, and work boots that laced up. Despite the clothing, no one would ever take her for anything but female.
What's your name?
Selena. Selena Webster.
I'm Conrad Browning. This is my friend, Arturo Vincenzo.
Conrad handed her the canteen. After taking one more drink, she gave the canteen back to him.
I can't thank you enough for helping me, but I'm afraid you've just doomed yourself. Oh, like Jackson Leatherwood said, When you interfere with Father Agony's men, you've signed your own death warrant.
Father Agony? That's a pretty melodramatic name, don't you think?
It's what some of his wives call him. His name is Agonistes Hyssop.
The man's parents had odd taste in nomenclature.
Or else they were readers and admirers of Milton's Samson Agonistes. Agonistes being from Greek for one who struggles for a worthy cause.
The man's parents raised a monster. His name is hardly the worst thing about him.
He's the elder. Leatherwood and who the others work for?
He has a ranch about 20 miles northwest of here in a place called Juniper Canyon. It's more like his own little town, because a lot of his followers live there as well. He's a very rich, important man, and he doesn't let anybody forget it.
You mentioned his wives. I seem to remember reading in the newspaper that the Mormon Church outlawed polygamy almost 10 years ago.
Just because Father Agony is a saint doesn't mean he agrees with everything the church leadership does. He believes he's a prophet, like Joseph Smith, and that God has granted him the wisdom and the right to make his own laws. He's always had multiple wives, and he doesn't want to give them up.
Let me guess. He wants to add you to the number.
I'll never marry him. He can kill me first, or more likely have Leatherwood and the rest of his avenging angels do it for him. But I don't care. That would be better than...
Maybe it won't come to that. I don't like to brag, but Arturo and I are pretty good at handling trouble.
Have you ever had an army of Triggerites after you? Because that's what you'll be facing if you try to help me. I appreciate what you did, but you'd be better off if we went our separate ways. If Leatherwood and the others see that I'm not traveling with you, maybe he'll spare your lives. Maybe.
We're not going to abandon you. Once I take cards in a game, I like to play it out.
Conrad glanced toward the sun.
It's past the middle of the afternoon. We'll let the horses rest for a while longer, then we can start looking for a place to hole up for the night.
Why don't you sit in the buggy, Miss Webster? The canopy provides a bit of shade from that brutal sun.
Thank you. You're very nice.
Oh, not really. I just know that having you suffer a sunstroke would only make our situation worse.
Oh. Well, in that case, I appreciate it anyway.
She climbed onto the buggy seat. Conrad kept an eye not only on the area where they had left Jackson Leatherwood and the other avenging angels, but also on the rest of the landscape around them. He wouldn't put it past Leatherwood and the others to circle around and come at them from a different direction. The vast expanse of Utah seemed as open and empty as if it had been on the moon. Selena's exhaustion caught up to her, and she dozed off with her head sagging forward.
Are you sure that getting involved in this young woman's problems is a good idea, sir?
No, it's a terrible idea. We need to get on about our own business. I know that. But look at her. She's not much more than a girl.
A very attractive girl.
Yes, but that doesn't have anything to do with it. She's in trouble, and if we won't help her, who will? Maybe we can take her someplace where she'll be safe from those men.
Half an hour later, Conrad tied Selena's horse to the back of the buggy. Selena stirred when Arturo climbed onto the seat beside her. Suddenly, her head snapped up and she looked around.
It's all right, Miss Webster. You're among friends.
She looked like she wanted to bolt out of the buggy and take off running. After a moment, her fear seemed to subside, and she sank back onto the seat.
Oh, I'm sorry. At first, I didn't remember what had happened. I thought I'd passed out somewhere and that Leatherwood and his men were still after me. Oh, which, of course, they are. They'll never give up. Not as long as they're alive. Are you sure you want to take on my troubles?
Conrad stepped up into the saddle.
We wouldn't have it any other way.
They made camp at the foot of a small mesa, giving them protection from the chilly winds that often sprang up at night. Conrad started to unsaddle Selena's horse before he tended to the black and the buggy team.
Oh.
She hopped down from the buggy and hurried over.
I can take care of my horse. I don't want to be any more of a burden than I have to.
I don't mind.
No, I'll handle it.
Selena unstrapped the saddlebags and set them aside.
I insist.
Conrad shrugged and turned to the black gelding. Obviously, Selena Webster was a proud young woman. While it was still light, Arturo kindled a small and almost smokeless fire to boil coffee, fry bacon, and heat up some beans and biscuits left over from supper the night before. The fire would be out by the time the sun set. Conrad figured Leatherwood and the others wouldn't have much trouble tracking them, but it didn't make sense to help their enemies by announcing where they were. Selena shook her head when Arturo offered her a cup of coffee.
I don't take stimulants. Oh, no offense.
Oh, none taken. I do require stimulants, especially when traveling through a godforsaken wilderness. This way, there's more for me.
It's not godforsaken. This part of Utah may not look like much, but God is here.
Conrad hunkered on his heels and reached for the cup Arturo offered him.
From the things you say, I suppose you're a Mormon too.
Of course. I never deny my faith, Mr. Browning. Just because I don't want to marry Father Agony doesn't mean that I'm...
a heathen Gentile like me?
Well, that's not exactly how I would have put it.
Don't worry. I don't spend a lot of time worrying about anybody's religion, or lack of it, including my own. I'll admit to being curious, though. Were you raised out here?
Selena nodded as she took the tin plate Arturo handed her.
Well, that's right. My grandparents on both sides came here with Brigham Young. My family has been here ever since.
What about your parents? Do they live at this Juniper Canyon place?
My father does. My mother passed away a year ago.
Ah, condolences.
My father is one of Father Agony's men. Father Agony has had his eye on me ever since... well, ever since I stopped being a little girl. My mother knew I didn't want to marry him, so while she was still alive, she was able to exert enough influence on my father to keep him dragging his feet on the matter whenever Father Agony approached it. But since she passed on, I knew it was just a matter of time before my father agreed to what Father Agony wants. He'll make it worthwhile for my father.
I have to say, I mean no offense, Miss Webster, but bartering one's flesh and blood that way seems rather medieval, even barbaric.
It's the way things are done at Juniper Canyon, and in other places too. And it's not always bad. Some of the elders are fine men, and their wives are very happy. I just don't want to live my life that way.
Nobody can blame you for that, and nobody should force you to either.
Unfortunately, they can't do that, whether it's illegal or not. I thought if I could get away from there, I'd go to California. I might be safe there.
How do you plan on getting there?
I have a little money. My mother saved it. She meant to use it to help me get away when the time came. She told me where she hid it. And that horse is mine. My father gave it to me. I didn't steal it.
I never said you did.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm used to everyone being suspicious of me all the time.
Perhaps with good reason. Since you did run away.
All I know is that I'm not going back. They'll have to kill me to get me back to Juniper Canyon. And I don't think Father Agony would be very happy about that.
It's not going to come to that. It just so happens we're headed west. You'll come along with us, and when we get into Nevada and find a town, we can put you on a train for San Francisco. The men who are after you will have a pretty hard time finding you there. We might even come across a flag stop along the way and manage to get you on a train before we get to Nevada.
That would be wonderful. Like I said, I can pay.
Don't worry about that. You'll need your money once you get to California.
But you've already done so much.
It won't be a problem.
The sun was a red ball touching the tops of the mountains. As soon as it dropped below the peaks, night would fall with stunning swiftness.
Arturo, we better put the fire out before it gets dark.
While Arturo was doing that, Conrad stood and walked over to check on the horses picketed nearby. As soon as the light faded, he intended to saddle the animals again, in case they needed to get away in a hurry during the night. In fact, he decided it might be a good idea to take more precautions than that. Leatherwood or one of the other avenging angels might have been watching them from a distance with field glasses. Selena looked drowsy. She'd had a bedroll strapped behind her saddle, and Conrad figured she'd like to curl up in it and get some sleep. But those precautions he had thought of came first. He went back to kneel beside the extinguished fire.
As soon as it's dark, we're going to move camp.
Why? This seems like a good place.
Yeah, and those fellas who are after you might think so too. They may have been watching without us knowing. If they think this is where we camp, they're liable to slip in here and grab you during the night.
I understand. I don't want that to happen.
Neither do we.
As Conrad expected, night descended quickly. The sky faded from blue to black, with millions of stars seeming to wink into existence. The floor of the desert was cloaked in Stygian gloom. Working by feel, Conrad and Arturo hitched the team to the buggy. Conrad intended to saddle Selena's horse for her, but by the time they were finished with the buggy, she had already taken care of that chore. Conrad turned his attention to the black gelding. He saw that they were ready to go.
We'll lead the horses at a slow walk to keep from making as much noise as we can. Sounds carry a long way out here.
I know. I grew up here, remember?
Then maybe you know of some other place we can camp.
If I'm right about where we are, there's some big rocks about 2 miles from here.
Can you find them in the dark?
Maybe. They should be west of us. I know a little about steering from the stars.
So do I. Let's go.
Conrad listened for the sound of horses moving around the countryside as he, Arturo, and Selena led the animals at a deliberate pace toward the rocks Selena had mentioned. He didn't hear anything except the steady hoofbeats of their horses and the faint sighing of the night wind. If Leatherwood and the rest of the Mormon gunmen were on the move, they were probably trying to be quiet about it, too. They'd gone what seemed like 2 miles.
I don't understand. We should have found the rocks by now.
They're around here somewhere. If you get offline just a little, it can make a big difference in where you end up. Let's stop here and take a look around.
They halted and spread out to scan the surrounding landscape as best they could by starlight.
I think I see something.
Conrad and Selena joined him, and he pointed toward some dark shapes in the distance.
Could that be them?
I think it is.
With a specific destination in sight, they set off again, and a few minutes later found themselves standing in front of the scattered slabs of rock, the largest of which were 10 feet tall and 30 feet wide.
What a distinctive formation. If I were a geologist, I think I might like to study these rocks.
If you were a geologist, you probably wouldn't be here.
I didn't think I was a two-fisted, gun-toting frontiersman either. But sometimes fate forces us into strange and unexpected roles.
That's certainly true. The two of you ought to be all right here. I'm going back to the mesa.
Back to the mesa? Well, why in the world would you do that if you think that Leatherwood and his men might attack the camp we had there?
While it was still light, I noticed a little trail leading to the top. If I can get up there, I'll hear them when they ride up, and maybe I can eavesdrop on whatever they say. It could give us a real advantage if we know what their plans are.
That's a very astute observation, and a cunning stratagem. I stand guard here, I assume.
That's the plan.
Very good. Be careful, sir.
Yes.
Selena moved closer to Conrad in the darkness. She reached out and rested her hand on his forearm for a second.
Be careful. I really don't want you getting killed on my account.
I don't intend to.
Conrad took his Winchester but left his horse, heading off on foot back in the direction they had come from. Lit by the faint, silvery glow of the stars, the landscape around him was eerie, and once again Conrad was struck by how alien his surroundings were, as if he were on some other planet. At times, he felt like the only human presence in a vast emptiness. But that wasn't true, of course. Other humans were out there in the darkness, and unfortunately, they wanted him dead. He was going to do his very best to disappoint them. His sense of direction didn't betray him. The mesa where he and Arturo and Selena had camped briefly loomed up ahead of him. He paused to listen, but didn't hear men or animals moving around anywhere. Hoping he wasn't headed right into a trap, he resumed walking toward the mesa. When he reached it, he had to hunt around for a few minutes before he found the trail he had noticed earlier. It was a rough ledge, barely wide enough for one man, that wound around the mesa. The footing was treacherous. Taking it slow, he climbed toward the top. The mesa wasn't that tall, 70 or 80 feet maybe, but a fall from the ledge might prove fatal. At the very least, he would be hurt badly enough to be easy prey for Leatherwood and his avenging angels. The climb took several minutes, but when Conrad reached the top, he could see for a long way all around. During the day, the view could extend for miles. The mesa was about 100 yards in diameter. A few bushes grew on top, but mostly the vegetation consisted of clumps of grass. Conrad stretched out not far from the edge overlooking the spot where their camp had been. From there, he could also cover the top of the trail. If Leatherwood and the other gunmen discovered he was up there, they would have him trapped. There was nowhere for him to go unless he sprouted wings and flew away. But they would have to come up that ledge one at a time, and he could pick them off with ease. They would have to starve him out, which they might be perfectly capable of doing. Conrad wouldn't be surprised at all if they were that merciless. The ground retained some of the day's warmth, even though the sun had set several hours earlier, but the night breezes sweeping the top of the mesa grew increasingly chilly. Conrad didn't mind. The cool air helped keep him awake. His senses were attuned to his surroundings, but he knew his hearing was the most valuable. In all likelihood, he would hear the approach of the gunmen before he saw them, assuming they showed up at all. The minutes dragged past. He wasn't sure how long he'd been waiting, but thought the moon ought to be rising any time. If Leatherwood was going to make a move, it would have to be soon. A few minutes later, he heard a faint metallic sound of metal hitting rock, someone's spur, a gun barrel, something like that. It was enough to tell him someone was out there. As quietly as he could, he crawled forward until he could look over the mesa's rim. Suddenly, orange flame burst out below him. He jerked his head down and squeezed his eyes closed, hoping his night vision hadn't been completely ruined. During that fleeting instant when the fire seemed to fill his sight, he caught a glimpse of the blazing brand, a bundle of sagebrush or greasewood, as it flew through the air toward the campsite. He thought whoever had thrown it had two reasons for doing so. He wanted to blind and disorient the people who were supposed to be camping there, and he wanted some light to shoot by.
Hold your fire! Hold your fire! They're not here!
Jackson Leatherwood. Conrad was sure of it. The leader of the Avenging Angels had brought his men to wipe out Conrad and Arturo and recapture Selena Webster. But the plan had come up empty. The bundle of burning brush lay on the ground near the foot of the cliff. Ominous shapes moved out of the darkness and into the edge of the circle of light cast by the flames. Conrad recognized the wide-brimmed hats and the long coats. He even got a look at Leatherwood's scarred face as the man strode forward. He angrily kicked the burning brush apart, scattering it and causing sparks to fly in the air.
They didn't make a camp here after all. They must have eaten supper and moved on.
But I saw them. They unsaddled their horses, unhitched the team from the buggy, and spread their bedrolls.
Tricks. Tricks meant to fool you. And they did.
I'm sorry, Jackson.
The closest good water is in the tanks at Frenchman's Flat. They'll have to head there or water stop on the railroad at Navajo Wash. We'll split up. Kylie, take two of the men and ride to the wash. The rest of us will go to Frenchman's Flat.
You sure it's a good idea dividing our forces like that, Jackson?
There were only two men.
Plus the girl. That makes three. The odds are even if you count her.
She's a girl. She's not going to fight.
She had the gumption to run away from Elder Hyssop. She might surprise you.
Let's get back to the horses. God is on our side. He's not going to take the side of a couple of Gentiles and a wayward girl over his own avenging angels.
Conrad hoped Leatherwood was wrong about that. He waited while the men walked off and vanished into the darkness. A few minutes later, Conrad could hear the avenging angels ride away from the mesa. He waited until he couldn't hear the horses at all, then waited some more. Finally satisfied the gunmen were gone, he stood up, made his way to the ledge, and started down. As he climbed, he thought about what to do next. He and Arturo had several canteens full of water, as well as a small barrel of it stowed in the back of the buggy. But it was a long, dry stretch across that part of Utah. Conrad had planned to take advantage of the water stops along the railroad. He'd just learned some of their enemies would be waiting for them at Navajo Wash, so that was out. And so were the tanks at Frenchman's Flat, wherever that was. Maybe Selena would know of another place they could replenish their water supply. When he reached the bottom of the trail, he turned in the direction of the rocks, but had taken only a couple of steps before he heard an all-too-familiar sound behind him.
Don't move, mister. It'll be easier on me keeping you alive, but I'll shoot you if I have to.
Kylie.
You know me?
Only by what Leatherwood called you. I thought you went to Navajo Wash.
I know what you thought. I told the other men with me to go on, that I'd catch up to them at the wash, then doubled back here on foot. I spotted that little ledge when we were here earlier. Jackson never noticed it, but I thought at least one of you might be on top of the mesa. Looks like I was right. I would have gone up, but I heard you coming down and decided to wait and get the drop on you.
You want all the credit for bringing back the girl, don't you? You're trying to impress Father Agony, so he'll make you the top man in his gang.
Don't you disrespect Elder Hyssop by using that awful name for him. He's shouldn't refer to the Avenging Angels as a gang, either. We're doing the Lord's work.
By killing?
That's what it takes. Now tell me, are the other two still up there?
I'm not telling you anything.
And you're a fool. I'll put a bullet in your knee so you can't run, and you hurt so bad you tell me anything I want to know. Or you can cooperate, and once I have the girl, I'll let you and your friend go.
Normally, Conrad wouldn't have believed a promise like that. He didn't know Mormons well enough to be sure what they might do, however. Maybe Kylie was telling the truth. It didn't really matter. Conrad wasn't going to turn Selena over to him. No matter how Agonistes Hyssop's other wives felt about it, Selena regarded marriage to the Elder as being locked away in prison, and Conrad wasn't going to condemn her to that. His mind raced furiously. His options were limited. In the bad light, he might be able to throw himself to the side, whirl around, and drill Kelly with a round from the Winchester before the man could shoot him. But Kylie would get at least one shot off, and the sound of the blasts would travel a long way over the desert. Leatherwood and the rest of the Avenging Angels would hear them and likely come galloping back. He decided for the moment the best thing to do was stall and wait for an opportunity.
All right. They're waiting up there while I check things out down here. You can go up, see for yourself.
And turn my back on you? I don't think so. You go up the trail first.
All right.
Conrad started toward the ledge, dropping the Winchester.
Just be careful with that gun. I don't want you shooting me accidentally.
If I shoot you, it won't be by accident.
Conrad stepped onto the ledge. He kept his hands in plain sight so Kylie wouldn't get nervous and trigger happy. In some places, the path was so steep and rough, he had to rest his left hand on the mesa wall to steady himself. If he climbed all the way to the top, Kylie would realize Arturo and Selena weren't there. He would be in the same position he'd been in when Kylie first got the drop on him. Conrad needed to turn the tables on the gunman. Seeing a loose rock on the trail, he stepped over it, planted his foot, and kicked backwards. His boot heel hit the rock and sent it rolling down the trail right under Kylie's feet.
Uh-oh!
As Conrad swung around, he saw that dodging the rock had caused Kylie to lose his balance and fling out both arms to catch himself, which meant the gun in his hand wasn't pointed at Conrad anymore. Lunging at the man, Conrad reached out to close his hand over the revolver's cylinder so the hammer would strike the web of flesh between his thumb and forefinger rather than the bullet in the chamber. In the same movement, he swung a hard punch at Kylie's head. Kylie jerked his head aside as the glancing blow scraped over his ear. Trying to wrestle his revolver out of Conrad's grip, he lowered his shoulder and bulled into him, slamming him against the mesa's sandstone wall. Neither man said anything as they struggled on the narrow ledge. Kylie got a hand on Conrad's throat and forced him toward the edge. Conrad planted his feet and jabbed a punch into Kylie's midsection. Conrad threw his strength into another heave on the revolver and finally ripped it free of Kylie's grasp. Slashing at the gunman's head, he felt the butt thud heavily against Kylie's temple. Conrad took the advantage and knocked Kylie's hand away from him. For a split second, neither of them had hold of the other. Conrad pressed his back against the mesa and lifted his right boot in a kick that landed in Kylie's belly. Kylie bent over and stumbled back a step, his right foot sliding off the edge of the trail. He flung his hands out toward the wall in a frantic scrabble for a grip that would save him, but there was nothing there. Conrad stood with his back against the wall, his chest heaving as he tried to catch his breath. His head was still spinning from being rammed against the rock. After a few moments, he felt steady enough to straighten and look over the trail's edge. He saw a dark, unmoving shape sprawled on the ground. With Kylie's unfired gun in his hand, he went back down the trail. When he reached the bottom, he kept the revolver leveled at Kylie's motionless form. As he approached, he saw a spreading pool of black under the gunman's head. Kylie must have landed on a rock that split his skull wide open. He risked checking for a pulse and found none. Kylie was dead. He would do no more avenging for Elder Agonistes Hyssop. Conrad straightened from that grim task and tucked Kylie's gun behind his belt. Sooner or later, the two men on their way to Navajo Wash would wonder why Kylie hadn't caught up with them. That meant he had a chance to surprise them, Conrad realized. He had to find Kylie's horse. The animal couldn't be too far away. He stripped the duster off the dead man, picked up Kylie's hat, and then headed off into the darkness. Conrad headed in the direction of Navajo Wash and found the gunman's horse tied to a mesquite about half a mile from the mesa. He unfastened the reins and led the animal toward the rocks. He had left on foot and was coming back with a horse, so he wasn't surprised when Arturo called out to him.
Whoever you are, stop right there. I have a rifle pointed at you and I'm not afraid to use it.
It's me, Arturo. I'm coming in.
He trotted the rest of the way to the camp in the rocks where Arturo and Selena greeted him with questions.
Where did you get the horse?
Are you all right?
I'm fine. Arturo, the horse belonged to that fellow Kylie, who was with Leatherwood earlier.
Belonged? As in the individual is now dead?
That pretty much sums it up.
We didn't hear any shots.
There weren't any.
Quickly, Conrad explained how Leatherwood and the other Avenging Angels had sneaked up on the mesa only to find their quarry gone, then discussed their plans while Conrad was eavesdropping on them.
I thought they were all gone, but when I got down to the bottom of the trail, Kylie was waiting for me. He had doubled back on foot.
And you killed him without firing a shot? Well, how on earth did you manage that?
Conrad told them about the fight on the ledge.
It was pretty close to a disaster, but I was finally able to get the upper hand.
Along with the man's horse and gun.
That's not all.
Conrad had draped Kelly's duster over the saddle and hung the gunman's hat on the saddle horn. He took them down.
If I was wearing these and riding this horse, from a distance I could pass for Kylie.
And there are only two men at this place called Navajo Wash.
Exactly. If they think it's Kylie riding up on them, they won't be looking for trouble.
Wait a minute. What is it you're planning on doing, Mr. Browning? Riding in and shooting it out with those men?
Not necessarily. If I can get close enough without them realizing who I am, I can disarm them, tie them up, and leave them there for Leatherwood to find when he realizes we're not going to Frenchman's Flat. That plan depends on a couple of things, though. Are you familiar with this Navajo Wash place?
Elder Hyssop had driven some of his cattle there to load them on the train when he sold them and had to ship them out. Sometimes practically the entire community would go along on those trips.
Is there anything there except a water tank so the locomotives can refill their boilers?
There's a siding and a little shed. That's all I recall. There's certainly not a settlement or anything like that.
Then there won't be anybody around to help them or get caught in a crossfire.
You mean no one will be in danger except you?
I have a pretty good idea of what I'm getting into.
So you're going to risk your life? Again? For someone you haven't even known for 12 hours?
He does this sort of thing all the time.
Why don't you let me worry about that? The next question is, do you know how to get to Navajo Wash from here?
I think I can find it.
In the dark?
Probably. Well, it's on the railroad, so all we have to do is find the tracks.
How long will it take to get there?
I don't really know. A couple of hours, maybe?
The moon had risen while Conrad was on his way back to the rocks. He took out his watch, opened it, and used the moonlight to see the time.
Try to get some sleep, Selena. We won't leave here for a while. I want to get to Navajo Wash before dawn, but when it's light enough so the men who are there can see me coming and recognize Kylie's coat and horse. The two of you will be well behind me, out of sight.
I don't like it, but there's not really any point in arguing with you, is there?
None at all.
Conrad was able to snatch an hour's sleep while Arturo stood watch, but his nerves were too taut to let him relax much. Everyone was still tired when they saddled the horses, hitched up the buggy team, and started for Navajo Wash. Selena had insisted on saddling her own horse again, and Conrad was starting to think that there was something odd about that. He didn't know what to make of it, but didn't want to press Selena for answers. He had more important things to worry about. Selena seemed worried, too. She was currently riding on the buggy.
Well, why can't we just go around Navajo Wash and avoid Frenchman's Flat, too?
If we don't stop at either of those places, where's the next good water?
I don't know.
Neither do I. That's the point. In a country like this, you're better off taking on water wherever you can, because you don't know how long it'll be before you find more. There's something else to consider, too. It's possible a westbound train will come along while we're there. We can get you on it without having to take you to Nevada. You could be out of this Father Agony's reach in a few hours.
That sounds good. But we have no way of knowing a train will come along and stop there.
It's a chance, but I think it's a risk we can afford to run if we take care of those two men who are waiting there.
Selena started to say something else, but fell silent before the words left her mouth. Conrad had a pretty good idea what she was thinking. She was afraid of the Avenging Angels and didn't want them taking her back to Juniper Canyon. But they were also part of the community in which she had grown up. Conrad had killed one of them already, and two more of them might die at his hands before the sun came up. It had to bother her. She didn't want to go back and marry Hyssop. That feeling was the stronger, Conrad sensed. So she was torn. When it came down to making a choice, she would choose her freedom over the lives of the men pursuing her. Nobody could blame her for that. They practically tripped over the steel rails of the Southern Pacific.
Navajo Wash should be a few miles west of here. You cross the wash itself on a trestle before you get to the water tank. You'll be able to see the water tank without any trouble.
And the men waiting there should be able to see me.
Conrad looked at the eastern sky, which had started to turn gray with the approach of dawn. Sunrise was still an hour or so away. That would give him plenty of time to reach the wash before the sky brightened enough to give the waiting gunman a good look at him. He swung down from the black and tossed his Stetson into the back of the buggy. Arturo handed him Kylie's wider-brimmed hat. Conrad settled it on his head, then shrugged into the long duster they had brought with them.
From a distance, you look enough like him to fool them.
That's the idea.
Conrad untied Kylie's dun from the back of the buggy. Selena jumped to the ground and went over to him.
I've only known you for a few hours, and already this is the second time I'm telling you to be careful and not get killed.
No, you might as well get used to it.
I'll be all right, Selena. When they see me coming, they'll think I'm Kylie, and they'll wonder where I've been all night. I'll be too curious to start shooting until it's too late.
I hope you're right.
Conrad turned to Arturo.
I'll come back and get you when it's safe. Till then, stay here and keep your eyes open. Keep your Winchester handy, too.
Like it's my oldest, dearest friend.
Conrad mounted up, nodded to them, and heeled Kylie's horse into motion. The dun was a big, strong animal, and soon it stretched its legs into a smooth, ground-eating lope. Conrad followed the twin dark lines of the rails as they arrowed westward. Arturo, Selena, and the buggy were soon out of sight behind him, disappearing into the thick gray pre-dawn gloom. Half an hour later, the sky was light enough that Conrad was able to spot something sticking up beside the tracks about a half mile ahead of him. He slowed the dun to a walk. Within a few minutes, he recognized the shape as a big round water tank elevated on a spidery framework of wooden legs. Conrad maintained his slow, steady approach. He came to the wash, a dry, wide, shallow cut in the ground that once or twice a year would fill with raging water during the flash floods caused by an occasional downpour making its way through the normally arid landscape. A trestle spanned the wash. Conrad rode onto it. He looked intently at the shed next to the water tank. He didn't see any movement, but it was big enough the two avenging angels and their horses could be concealed behind it. If they were there, likely they had spotted him already. They would be watching, ready for trouble, trying to make out his identity. The water tank was about 100 yards beyond the wash. Conrad had covered half that distance when he saw two men step out from behind the shed, just as he expected. They were holding rifles, but as he tensed, poised to reach for his own Winchester, which he had slipped into Kylie's saddle boot, one of the men suddenly took off his hat and waved it over his head in what Conrad took to be an all-clear signal. His heart thudded in his chest as he rode closer. His masquerade had worked, at least so far. Only 20 yards more. The man waving his hat clapped it back on his head.
Hey, Kylie, where have you been? We expected you a long time ago.
The other man moved a step closer.
Did you run into trouble?
Conrad didn't answer. He just kept the horse moving and narrowed the gap between him and the avenging angels that much more. He was almost in handgun range. The second man stopped short.
That's not Kylie!
He jerked his rifle to his shoulder.
Gah!
Conrad dug his heels into the horse's flanks and sent the animal lunging ahead in a gallop. The wind caught the wide-brimmed hat, plucked it from his head, and sent it sailing behind him. The long tails of the duster flapped like the wings of a giant bird. Conrad didn't know where the slug went, but didn't feel its smashing impact. He drew his Colt and took aim at the first man. First man spun off his feet as those bullets crashed into him. Kylie's horse was practically on top of the second man, who leaped desperately out of the way to avoid being trampled. The gunman dropped his rifle as he rolled, but he came up with his revolver in his fist. Avoiding the shots, Conrad made a dash for the shed. Suddenly, one of the man's wild shots burned across the dun's rump and made the horse leap in the air. He wasn't expecting that and felt himself leading the saddle. Quickly, he kicked his feet free of the stirrup so the dun wouldn't drag him if it bolted. He hit the ground hard enough to knock the wind out of him, but there was no time to rest and catch his breath. He forced his muscles to work and surged to his feet. A bullet kicked up grit and gravel just to his right. Conrad snapped a shot at the remaining gunman, who was crouched at the corner of the shed. Conrad was in a bad spot, and he knew it. He usually carried the Colt's hammer on an empty chamber, but had slipped a sixth round into the cylinder before he approached the water tank. He had one shot left in the revolver. His rifle was in the saddle boot on the horse that was kicking around 20 yards away, still spooked by the bullet burn on its rump, and the man who wanted to kill him had the only good cover anywhere around. Well, maybe not the only cover, Conrad realized. The legs of the water tank were better than nothing. If he could make it up the ladder to the platform on which the tank sat, he could take cover behind the massive container. He broke into a run toward the tank and aimed one last time at the gunman. The bullet smacked into the shed wall close enough to make the man jerk back, giving Conrad a couple of seconds. He took advantage of the respite and ran as hard as he could. The framework of the tank's legs loomed in front of him, looking more spider-like than ever in the dim light. A slug chewed splinters from one of the thick beams as Conrad ducked behind them. He pouched the empty iron and reached as high as he could on the ladder. He started to climb. He almost lost his hold on the ladder as he felt the vibration of a bullet hitting one of the rungs he was grasping. A splinter stung his cheek, but he didn't fall. He kept moving, and a second later, he reached the top. He hauled himself onto the platform. A fast roll and jump put him behind the tank itself. The thick wood and the thousands of gallons of water they held would shield him from any more bullets. But a standoff wasn't what he wanted. As he lay there, he pulled fresh cartridges from the loops on his shell belt and thumbed them into the Colt, filling the cylinder again. He couldn't afford to let the gunman pin him down. Arturo and Selena were waiting for him to return. He had to dispose of the last avenging angel so they could fill their canteens and water barrel, then wait for a train to come along or head west again, depending on what else happened. It suddenly dawned on Conrad that the gunman had stopped shooting at him.
Hey! You hear me, mister?
I hear you.
Where's Kylie? How'd you get his horse and clothes?
Think about it. Even a hard case like you ought to be able to come up with the answer.
You... You shouldn't have done that, mister.
And you shouldn't be trying to kidnap an innocent young woman.
You don't know our ways. You got no right to interfere. Elder Hissom's a prophet, same as Joseph Smith or Brigham Young. He's one of the anointed of God. You can't oppose his will. Anyway, you can't call that shameless Jezebel an innocent young woman. If that's what you think, you're a fool.
Conrad didn't know and didn't care what the man meant by that. He was trying to figure out some way of ending the standoff before it dragged on much longer. The shed was fairly close to the structure supporting the water tank. 10 feet separated them, Conrad judged. He looked at the tank itself. The pipe supplying the water ran up the side of the tank, then turned at a 90-degree angle to go through an opening near the top. He thought he might be able to climb up that pipe, crawl over the cover on top used to keep the fierce heat of the Utah sun from evaporating the water it held, and leap down to the shed roof, which was almost flat and had only a slight slope to it. Would the roof hold him, or would he crash through and break a leg or his neck? He was fairly certain the gunman wouldn't expect him to try such a loco stunt. And that's what it was, no mistake about it. But if it worked, he could take the man completely by surprise and put an end to the impasse. Conrad holstered the Colt, reached over his head, and grasped the pipe, hoping the braces attaching it to the tank were sturdy enough to support his weight. He leaned back to test the pipe. It seemed strong, without any give to it. Conrad lifted his right leg and planted the sole of his boot against the side of the tank. The thick, curving planks were rough enough to give him a little purchase. The muscles in his arms and shoulders bunched as he hauled himself upward. It was a hard climb, but the tank was only about 10 feet tall, so it didn't take too long. As Conrad reached the top and rolled onto the boards, the man behind the shed called out to him again.
What's gonna be, mister? I can stay here all day! Keep you up there. Pretty soon the sun will be up. You won't have any shade. It'll fry you like an egg. Not only that, Leatherwood and the rest of the men will be here before day's over. They'll surround that water tank and pick you off. You might as well give up now.
Conrad lay there a few minutes, letting the quivering muscles in his arms, shoulders, and back recover. Without standing up, he peeled out of the duster and left it lying on top of the tank. Then he crawled to the other side. He couldn't see the man who crouched at the edge of the shed. When he made his move, he wanted the gunman's attention focused elsewhere, so he reached in his pocket and slid out a silver dollar. With a flick of his wrist, he sent the coin sailing over the railroad tracks. When the silver dollar landed on a cross tie, it bounced and struck one of the rails.
Huh?
That was enough to make the tightly stretched nerves of the gunman snap. He whirled toward the sound and triggered his gun. And while that gun thunder rolled, Conrad surged to his feet, drew his Colt, and left the top of the water tank in a leap that carried him toward the shed. For a breathtaking instant, Conrad seemed to hang in midair. He tucked himself into a roll as his feet hit the sandy ground behind the gunman. Twisting, he came back up on one knee. The gunman turned toward him, but Conrad's gun was already level. Both slugs slammed into the gunman's body. He dropped his revolver and pitched forward, sprawling on his face. The avenging angel didn't move. Conrad stood, and with the toe of his boot, he rolled him onto his back. The reddish gold light of the dawn reflected back from the man's sightless, staring eyes. Conrad reached down with his left hand and closed the man's eyes. He reloaded the Colt and slipped it back into the holster. The horses belonging to the two dead men were spooked by the shooting and gun smoke, but they were tied securely behind the shed and weren't going anywhere. Kylie's horse stood off down the tracks, seeming to have calmed down after being grazed by that bullet. Conrad figured he and his companions would take all three of the horses with them. In the rugged country, having extra mounts could turn out to be very important. His eyes narrowed as he caught sight of dust moving along the tracks to the east where he had left Arturo and Selena. Figuring Leatherwood and the other avenging angels might have found them, Conrad hurried toward Kylie's horse. He wanted the Winchester in the saddle boot. The horse gave him a wall-eyed stare but didn't run. Conrad grabbed hold of the reins with his left hand and used his right to draw the rifle from its sheath. Moving quickly, he led the horse back to the shed and tied it with the other two. Conrad stepped to the corner of the shed and levered around into the Winchester's firing chamber. Ready to bring the rifle to his shoulder and start shooting, he watched the cloud of dust come closer. He began to make out the shape at the base of the cloud and grunted in surprise as he recognized the buggy. When the vehicle came closer, he saw Arturo handling the team and Selena sitting beside him. Conrad couldn't see anyone chasing them. He stepped out from behind the shed so they could see him. As the buggy got closer, Arturo slowed the team and brought it to a halt. Conrad was a little surprised to see Selena holding Arturo's Winchester. He wondered if she would have used it if she'd needed to.
Are you all right?
She climbed down from the buggy.
I'm fine.
She turned toward him.
My God, you're bleeding!
Conrad reached up and touched his cheek. A single drop of blood was on his fingertip when he took it away.
Flying splinter nicked me, that's all. I'm all right. Question is, what are you two doing here? You were supposed to wait for me to come back and get you.
Tell that to the young lady. We heard shots.
And then a few minutes later, we heard more. I thought you might need our help.
Miss Webster can be very persistent when she wants something.
Well, it's all over now, and I'm fine. Let's fill up those canteens in the water barrel while we've got the chance.
The men who were waiting here.
Conrad leaned his head toward the shed.
Around on the other side. You don't want to go there.
I'm sorry. Oh, I've caused so much trouble. Three men are dead because of me.
That's where you're wrong. Those men are dead because they were willing to kill to do what that fellow Hyssop wants. You want to blame somebody, blame them and him, not yourself.
I know you're right. I just wish it had never come to this.
So do I.
Arturo got the water barrel and the canteens out of the buggy, while Conrad got hold of the chain attached to the spout leading from the tank.
We're going to get wet, Arturo. These tanks are designed so locomotives can refill their boilers, not for putting water in small containers like these. There was a station here the railroad would put in a hand pump and a spigot, but they figure something like that isn't necessary at a water stop.
Arturo tugged his derby down tighter on his head.
I'll be fine, sir.
He stood on the tracks and held the barrel out in front of him.
Fill away.
Conrad tugged the chain to lower the spout. The flow splashed over Arturo's head and splattered on Conrad.
Selena, come hold the chain while I help Arturo with the barrel.
She was smiling as she came over to him, and he had to admit the sight of Arturo getting soaked was pretty amusing. A moment later, he was in the same boat as he helped his friend hold the barrel under the pouring water. In moments, they were both wet to the skin. When the barrel was almost full, Conrad turned to Selena.
Let it up!
They filled the canteens from the barrel, then refilled it to the top.
Arturo, carry all of this over to the buggy and place it in the back.
Arturo replaced the lid and tapped it down. Puddles of muddy water covered the ground, but it wouldn't take long for the sandy soil to soak them up.
Now there's just one more thing to do.
He reached into the back of the buggy and got a short-handled shovel from their gear. Selena's smile disappeared when she saw what Conrad was holding.
You carry a shovel with you?
You'd be surprised how often we have to bury someone.
A half hour later, Conrad finished tamping down the dirt he'd replaced in the grave shared by the two avenging angels.
Well, I think I see something coming. It might be a train.
Conrad tossed the shovel to Arturo to put back in the buggy and climbed up to join Selena on the platform. She pointed along the tracks to the east where puffs of smoke could be seen in the far distance.
Looks like a locomotive, all right. And it's even headed in the right direction. It's still several miles away.
Maybe it won't stop here.
Chances are it will. I can't imagine an engineer passing up a chance to take on water in country like this.
Riders, coming from the south.
Conrad bit back a curse and hurried around the tank so he could look in that direction. Arturo was right. A dust cloud swirled into the air. Selena came around the tank to join Conrad.
It's Leatherwood. It has to be.
Conrad thought she was probably right. It was going to be a tight race to see who arrived at the water stop first. The riders were closer, but the train was moving faster. Conrad figured there was a good chance everybody would get there about the same time.